She was a digital goddess, luring married men into her web with fake photos, seductive texts, and a voice that made them risk everything. But behind the screen, she wasn't just playing them, she was controlling them. Until one day, the predator became the prey. An anonymous stalker hacks her life, exposes her secrets, and flips the game on her. With her empire collapsing and a countdown to ruin ticking fast, she's forced to fight back or lose everything, including herself. This isn't just a story about blackmail. It's about power, obsession, and what happens when the hunter gets hunted. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Sextortionist. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Bait. They always come looking. Not the desperate kind. Not the ones who grovel and beg for attention. No, the ones I want are polished. Confident. The type who walk into boardrooms like they own the oxygen. Married. Well-fed. Bored as hell. They're not looking for love. They're looking for escape from their wives, their kids, their lives. And I'm the escape they never see coming. My name's not important. The one I use, anyway. Online, I go by Lollard. She's the woman they wish their wives had become. Always eager. Never tired. Never says no. Lola doesn't complain when they're late. She doesn't nag about bills or roll her eyes when they talk about their dreams. She listens, laughs, sends photos that make their throats dry, and asks for just enough to feel real. And when they bite hard. It starts with a message. This one's name is Marcus. 43. Vice president of something corporate sounding. Wife. Two kids. A Range Rover and a receding hairline that he hides behind expensive haircuts and cologne that smells like money and midlife crises. I met him on a discreet affair site. You know, the kind that claims they respect privacy while selling your secrets to anyone who asks loud enough. He messaged first. You seem different. Bingo. I waited a day to reply. That's the trick. Make them feel like they're chasing. The longer they wait, the more they want. By the time I replied, something coy, something light, he was already checking his inbox like a high schooler with a crush. I like a man who doesn't ask too many questions, I typed. Do you? He said. I prefer men who know what they want. And what do you want, Lola? Oh, Marcus. If only you knew. I sent him a selfie. Just a peek, collarbone, lips, the soft curve of my jaw. No face. Never a full face. Just enough to keep them obsessed. He took the bait like a starving dog. That night, we sexed until his guilt felt like foreplay. He told me things he'd never even whispered to his wife. Told me he felt alive again. Said he hadn't gotten a blowjob in months. I told him I'd fix that, when the time was right. I was patient. I let him paint the fantasy. All I did was hand him the brush. By day 3, I had him begging for photos. So I sent them. Not of me, of course. I've got a folder of professional shots. Women who look close enough. Enough filters and angles, and you could convince a priest that Jesus had tits. Marcus didn't question it. He didn't want to. He was too busy jacking off to fake tits and the thrill of betrayal. Then I asked for his. I told him I needed to see him. Really see him. He hesitated, like they all do at first. I'm married. So am I. I lied. You first. And he did. Shirt off, abs flexed. That pathetic look of lust in his eyes like he was 15 and hiding in the bathroom. Then came the dick pic. They always send it. Even the classy ones. Especially the classy ones. You just have to stroke their ego enough, and they'll unwrap themselves like Christmas morning. I saved every photo. Every message. Every breathless, pathetic line of text. The folder was labeled golf trip. I don't do this for money, not at first. Not for the thrill of the nudes or the validation. I do it because I love control. I love the silence after I ask for something and they pause. Not because they don't want to, but because they know they shouldn't, and then do it anyway. That moment of surrender. That little crack in the wall where their secrets start leaking through. That's where I live. You want to know how it all started? Fine. I'll tell you. 3 years ago, I was married. To a man named David. Clean cut. Smart. A sales manager who fucked his secretary and said it just happened. I found the messages while feeding our dog. One click. That's all it took to shatter everything I thought was real. And do you know what he said when I confronted him? He laughed. That smug motherfucker laughed. You're too sensitive. It was just texting. Texting. Like I was supposed to be okay with him describing how he wanted to bend her over his desk while I cooked him dinner. Like my trust was just collateral damage. I didn't cry. I didn't scream. I waited. I smiled. I fucked him one last time, let him think I was over it. Then I packed my shit and left without saying goodbye. I spent a year breaking myself down to the studs. Then I built something new. Stronger. Colder. Smarter. I built Lola. Now I'm the one who breaks things. I don't go after the good ones. I go after the ones like David. The ones who think they can lie with a smile and cheat without consequences. I find them. I lure them. And then I own them. By the end of week one, Marcus was already spiraling. He deleted our chats after every message. Told me I made him feel dangerous. He started skipping lunch to talk to me from his car. Sent me photos from the bathroom at work. Once, he snuck away during his daughter's recital, just to hear me moan on the phone. He didn't even notice when I asked for more, his full name, his LinkedIn, a photo of his face. He gave it willingly. Men like Marcus think with the wrong head. And I know exactly how to stroke it until they hand me the keys to their lives. And now, I had him. Fully. Irrevocably. His life was no longer his own. And he didn't even know it yet. Chapter 2, Strings Attached. Control doesn't happen all at once. It's not some grand moment of domination where they fall to their knees and call you mistress. No, control is quiet. It's subtle. It's the invisible thread wrapped around their fucking soul. Pulled tight, one little tug at a time. It's the silence that makes them sweat. The scene with no reply. The threat that's never spoken but always present. And Marcus? Marcus was tangled in my web like a fly humming in slow motion. Still believing he had wings while I already had the jar and the lid ready. It started small. It always does. After a week of endless sexts, phone calls, and videos that would make a nun climax, I sent the first real message. No nudes. No dirty talk. Just cold, clinical truth. Marcus, let's make this easier. Send me 500. He didn't reply right away. I pictured him sitting in his car, hand shaking over the screen, heart racing, dick soft for once. Finally realizing he wasn't in control of this little fantasy anymore. Good. That silence was my high. That's the moment they come face to face with their reality. They're not just cheating anymore, they're trapped. They gave me the scissors and asked me to cut their marriage thread by thread, but I chose to hold the blades just over their throats instead. 3 hours later, I got the notification. $500 received. I didn't say thank you. I didn't send a heart or a kiss or a, you're such a good boy. I let him sit in it. Let him stew in the fear, the shame, the sticky panic of knowing he'd just paid to keep his dick pic out of his wife's inbox. That night, he texted. Why are you doing this? I stared at the screen for a long time. And then I wrote back slowly like I was peeling his skin with every word. Because I can. And that's all it took. That's when he knew. Deep down in his hollow little chest, Marcus understood. This wasn't about sex anymore. This was about me. About what I wanted. About how much he'd give me before he broke in half and begged for mercy. He didn't block me. Didn't ghost. He apologized. Apologized. Said he understood. Said he'd be better. Like I was some dominatrix he needed to earn points with. And honestly, I let him believe that. I let him feel like this was still just some twisted roleplay. Like if he kept me happy, I'd go back to licking his ego and whispering his name while he fucked his hand in a Holiday Inn Express. Meanwhile, I created his folder. Marcus the Puppet. Inside. 43 screenshots of our conversations. 12 voice recordings of him moaning my name. 7 dick pics, 2 embarrassingly close. 1 photo of his daughter's dance recital program. Clearly visible in the background while he filmed himself masturbating. You see, that's the thing about digital seduction. Men forget their surroundings. They don't think about reflections or background noises. They're too busy chasing dopamine to realize I'm collecting evidence. Building cases. Preparing for war before they even know we're on opposite sides. And I'm undefeated. Marcus started texting me every day like a prisoner begging his captor for good behavior perks. He sent me coffee money in the mornings. Uber gift cards at night. He called me Lola, goddess of my destruction. I almost gagged when I read that one, but I kept it, might use it as a tagline someday. I had to be careful, though. You don't want them to crack too fast. A man with nothing to lose is useless to me. So I sprinkled in some softness. Sent him blurry nudes, voice notes of me moaning, even wrote him a fantasy once, about us in a hotel room, candles, silk sheets, the whole romantic lie. He thanked me like I'd written him scripture. Said no woman had ever understood him like I did. What he didn't know. I was multitasking during the call. Had another puppet, James, sending me his business schedule and planning a fake meetup that would never happen. Different threads. Same web. But back to Marcus. Week 2, I turn the screw. Let's raise the stakes. I texted. What do you mean? I want 1,000. And this time, I want you to beg. He hesitated again. I could feel it through the phone, that growing resistance. The part of him that was starting to wonder if maybe he could walk away. If maybe I was bluffing. So I sent him a little taste. A screenshot of one of our video chats. Split screen, his face, eyes rolled back, sweat on his forehead, dick in hand, and his wedding photo, visible in a frame on the dresser behind him. The silence was beautiful. And then, 3 minutes later, I got a text that made me smile. Please, Lola. I'll pay. Just please don't ruin my life. Ah, there it is. The please. The submission. The moment the puppet realizes he's a puppet. I waited 10 minutes before replying. Good boy. $1,000. Clean. Quick. No fuss. After that, I didn't have to ask again. He sent money before I even needed it. Weekly. Like it was part of his damn budget. I used it to buy myself a new pair of heels, blood red, sky high. The kind of heels you wear when you're stepping on someone's throat, slowly, seductively, just enough to hear them gasp. I didn't stop there. I asked Marcus to write me an email. Fake name. Fake scenario. He had to admit to everything. Had to say he'd cheated, sent explicit content, and was terrified of being exposed. I told him it was for my insurance. He didn't argue. He wrote it. That email? It's a kill switch. One I keep in an encrypted folder labeled Tax Documents 2021. Because who the fuck checks that? With Marcus fully leashed, I moved on to my next prospect. But I kept him around. Like a pet. Like a sad little reminder of what guilt and lust can do to a man's spine. He started calling me in the middle of the night, drunk and crying. I think I'm losing my mind. Then lose it quietly, I told him. What do you want from me? Everything. And the worst part? He wanted to give it. That's when I knew I'd perfected it. Not just the trap, but the entire performance. From flirtation to fear to total, soul-fucking domination. They weren't just paying to keep a secret anymore. They were paying for permission to fall apart. And me? I was just getting started. Chapter 3, Domino Effect. They say power corrupts. What they don't tell you is how fucking good it feels while it's doing it. Like a slow, intoxicating drip that seeps into your veins until you forget what normal ever felt like. By the time Marcus was wired, gagged, and dancing for my amusement, I realized I'd created something bigger than a game. Bigger than a side hustle. This wasn't about payback anymore. Not about getting even with men like my ex, David, who carved holes in me with his betrayal. No, this was a goddamn empire. And I was its quiet, pretty dictator, ruling from behind the screen with nothing but fake smiles, filtered cleavage, and a nuclear arsenal of screenshots. I stopped thinking of them as men. To me, they were profiles. Targets. Assets. Weak points in ties and tailored suits, begging to be pulled apart. Once you break one, if you do it right, the rest fall like dominoes. And baby, I was ready to knock the whole line down. Marcus became my case study. My prototype. He taught me the cadence, the rhythm of submission. He paid on time. Responded instantly. Even updated me on his whereabouts unprompted. Like I gave a fuck where his sales meeting was, or what time he'd be home. But he wasn't just being obedient. He was projecting. He thought if he overcompensated, I'd forget what he owed me. Spoiler alert, I don't forget shit. But Marcus gave me something more valuable than hush money. He gave me confidence. Once I saw how easily he crumbled, I realized just how simple this could be. The internet is an ocean of dicks. And I had the perfect bait. So I cast wider nets. Redownloaded all the discreet dating apps. The ones with tacky gold logos and privacy policies written by lawyers who've clearly never been blackmailed. I upgraded my profiles. New photos. New bios. Each one tailored to a different appetite. One profile for the spiritual, I just need connection types. Another for the lonely but dirty execs. And my favorite, the aggressive seductress for the alphas who wanted to be dominated. Each identity had a name, a backstory, and a photo bank of filtered, believable thirst traps. A tattoo here. A slightly different hairstyle there. You'd be amazed how easily people see what they want to see when their pants are around their ankles. And the responses? Immediate. Within hours, I had 7 new conversations brewing. By the next day, I had voice notes, shirtless selfies, and more bad sexting than my storage could handle. They were all the same, really. Married. Successful. Bored out of their fucking minds. Each of them convinced they were different. That I was different. That somehow, in the digital cesspool of sex and lies, they'd found a connection that made them feel seen. Spoiler alert number 2, they weren't. I wasn't. They were just next in line. One of them, let's call him Eli, was a tech CEO. Big name, bigger ego. He slid into my DMs with the subtlety of a wrecking ball. You're the kind of trouble I've been praying for. Cringe. I responded like I hadn't heard that line 100 times before. Pretended I was flattered. Pretended I wasn't simultaneously luring 2 other men into sending me pics of their IDs. Eli moved fast. Too fast. By day 2, he was asking for my real name. By day 3, he was FaceTiming me in his office while his assistant was in the next room. He wanted danger. He got it. I got him to send a video, naked, wearing nothing but a Rolex and a trembling erection. I didn't even have to ask for money. He offered, "Let me give you something, baby. You deserve it. $2,000. Just like that. I moaned once during a voice note and got a 4-digit deposit in 10 minutes. I didn't even have to fake an orgasm. Just dragged out my vowels and let his own imagination do the heavy lifting. Eli was obsessed. He messaged constantly. When I didn't reply, he panicked. When I did, he unraveled. I had him pinned before the end of the week. I knew his office schedule, the name of his wife's yoga studio, and the school his daughter attended. Not because I asked. He offered it up like it was part of the dance. Like confessing gave him permission to sin harder. And that's when I realized something dangerous. These men wanted to be controlled. The more I tightened the leash, the more they wagged their fucking tails. I told Eli I was thinking of exposing him, just to feel something. He didn't threaten me. Didn't warn me. He begged. Offered to leave his wife. Said we could move in together. Start fresh. I laughed so hard I choked on my wine. No, Eli. You don't get to make this romantic. This isn't love. This is war. And you're just another casualty in a war you didn't even know you were in. Then there was Brent. Lawyer. Late 30s. Soft-spoken. Thoughtful. Called me princess like we were starring in some sad indie love story. He cried the first time I told him I had dirt on him. Actual tears. I didn't even have to threaten him. I just hinted. And he cracked like glass under a stiletto. The more I collected, the more organized I became. I created a master vault. Encrypted. Labeled. Color-coded. Each man had a file. Photos. Audio. Bank details. Work addresses. Names of their children. Anything and everything I could use to break them. All backed up twice. One on an external hard drive locked in a fireproof safe. The other on an encrypted server in a data center across the world. Paranoia is the luxury of the prepared. By the end of month 2, I had 9 active puppets. 9 men sending money. 9 men keeping secrets. 9 men lying through their fucking teeth to their wives while they texted me from dinner tables, bathrooms, business trips, and even funerals. I made nearly 25 grand that month. All tax-free. All earned through nothing but words, pictures, and manipulation so precise it could make a sociopath weep. But this wasn't just about money anymore. It was about the high. The game. The power. Every ding of a new deposit felt like a shot of heroin to the soul. Every panicked message was music. Every please don't ruin me was applause. But with every new puppet added to my collection, I could feel the pressure mounting. The threads were multiplying. Tighter. Tauter. One wrong move, and everything could snap. And while I was careful, methodical, almost surgical with my traps, I knew it was only a matter of time before one of them tugged back. I just didn't expect it to be him. Chapter 4, The Puppet Show. First-person narration. Intimate. Cold. Calculated. You ever watch someone squirm without touching them? It's art. Better than sex. Better than money. It's pure control. And I don't mean the fake kind, like when a man thinks he's calling the shots because you let him slap your ass and choke you a little during missionary. I mean real, spine-bending, soul-suffocating, heartbeat-in-my-hand control. That's what I had. And by now, I'd gotten good at it. I wasn't just sexting married men anymore. I was orchestrating entire realities from behind my phone. I became a conductor of secrets. Each man a trembling violin string waiting for my next cue. One tap of my finger and they danced. Lied. Sent money. Canceled meetings. Cried in locked bathrooms while their wives tucked their kids in bed. I turned men into marionettes, fragile, horny little puppets. And I held all the strings. Brent, the lawyer, was scheduling his life around me. He'd call from his office, the bathroom, once even whispered to me from the goddamn courthouse lobby while waiting to argue a case. "Princess," he said, voice shaking, "can I send something extra this week? I don't want to disappoint you." I rolled my eyes so hard I nearly lost vision. Another one, Kevin, was sending me money every Friday like it was his fucking tithe. He even sent flowers to a P.O. box I set up under a fake name. The card read, "To my little goddess who owns my sins. Gag me." The hilarious part? I was bored. These men weren't challenges anymore. They were pathetic. Predictable. Easy. I had created a full-blown ecosystem of deceit. A dark digital garden where trust bloomed, only so I could poison it. Where every message was a thread I could pull. Every secret a pressure point I could press. Every hesitation a sign that they still believed they had a way out. They didn't. But even gods get bored. So when he messaged me, I felt it, that rush. That tingle at the base of my spine. He didn't introduce himself with a dick pic or a sad, "Hey, beautiful." He said, "I know what you are." I froze. That one sentence? It didn't come from thirst. It came from knowledge. I stared at the screen, rereading it over and over. My heart didn't skip, it slammed. For a split second, I considered deleting the app. Just gone. Like smoke. But then something darker crept in. Not fear. Not guilt. Curiosity. So I replied. Bold opening. "You always flirt like that." There was a long pause. Three dots blinked and disappeared. Then came the next message. "We'll see how charming you are without a camera in your hand." My palms started sweating. I hated that. No one made me sweat. No one made me the hunted. I tapped through his profile. No name. No job. Just a blurry photo of a man standing on a dock. Broad shoulders. Dark hoodie. Face turned just out of frame. His bio read, "I don't chase. I expose." I copied his username. Ran a background check. Traced his IP through a series of proxy bounces. He was good. Professional good. This wasn't some bitter ex-puppet trying to flex. This was someone who knew the game. Someone who'd played it, maybe even built it. I had to tread lightly. But even as the logical part of me screamed to back away, delete, block, disappear, the addict in me leaned in. Danger was an aphrodisiac. And I was already dripping with anticipation. He didn't message again for 2 days. And I felt that absence like a fucking itch under my skin. Meanwhile, the rest of my puppets danced. Brent sent me a voice note of him crying. Marcus messaged me. "I had a nightmare, you exposed me." Eli tried to send me a necklace I'd already sold on eBay 3 weeks ago. They were background noise now. I was fixated. Then he messaged again. "How many men have you destroyed, Lola?" No greeting. No context. Just straight into my jugular. I paused. Then replied. "Enough to know they deserved it." He responded immediately. "Deserved it? Or made you feel powerful?" I didn't answer. Instead, I did something I rarely did. I started talking to myself. Out loud. What the fuck does he want? What does he know? Why now? I replayed every step of my strategy. I had no loose ends. No names. No traceable data. My real number was buried under 5 layers of rerouting. My voice was modulated when I recorded moans. My photos were sourced from stock accounts and altered with surgical precision. But paranoia, when it's smart, isn't weakness. It's armor. I spent the next 72 hours tightening everything. Changed server passwords. Moved my physical backup drives. Rewrote scripts in my burner devices. Pulled every thread tighter. And still, he didn't message again. Until the fourth night. "I know about Eli. I know about Brent. I know what you made Marcus do." That stopped me cold. Only I used the names like that. And I never kept them in one place. "How the fuck?" I typed. "You're bluffing." He replied with a .zip file. I didn't open it. I couldn't open it. Not yet. I sat there, staring at the blinking cursor like it was a loaded gun. My skin buzzed. My mouth went dry. And my brain, always sharp, always 10 steps ahead, suddenly felt slow. Muddied. Like someone had finally walked into my soundproofed empire and cracked the foundation. I had to play this smart. "What do you want?" I typed. He didn't answer for 6 hours. When he did, the message was just 3 words. "Keep watching, whore." My stomach dropped. Not because of the insult. I'd been called worse by men with limp dicks and trust funds. No, it was who said it. And the tone. Calm. Cold. Like I wasn't the one in control anymore. Like someone had snuck behind the curtain and pulled a string I didn't know I had. That night, I didn't sleep. For the first time in years, I didn't feel powerful. I felt hunted. I still had my puppets, they were still moving, paying, begging. But I wasn't conducting the orchestra anymore. Someone else had slipped into the pit, stolen the baton, and was rewriting my symphony, note by fucking note. And I had no idea who he was. But I was going to find out. No matter how many strings I had to cut. Chapter 5, Cracks in the Mask. It started with a message. three fucking words. Keep watching, whore. And just like that, the illusion shattered. See, up until that moment, I believed I was invincible. Not because I thought I was smarter than everyone, but because I knew I was. I didn't move recklessly. I didn't get sloppy. Every step, every click, every message was premeditated, masked, encrypted, layered behind proxies and fake identities that I rebuilt monthly like clockwork. I was careful. I was untouchable. But when he sent that .zip file, when he named my puppets, their sins, and my strings, something inside me cracked. Not just fear. Something older. Something darker. A shadow I'd kept locked up so long, I forgot it even had a voice. For the first time in years, I felt seen. Not as Lola. Not as the temptress. Not as the puppet master. As me. And that terrified the fuck out of me. I didn't open the .zip file. I refused. I couldn't risk it. I didn't even know if it was laced with malware or a decoy meant to rattle me. But the damage was already done. The message was clear. Someone had slipped into my world, peeled back the curtain, and seen the strings I used to strangle men. And now, he was pulling mine. I stared at the screen for what felt like hours. My hand hovered over the keyboard, but I couldn't type. Not witty comebacks. Not veiled threats. Nothing. I felt naked. Exposed. Vulnerable. I hate that feeling. It took me back. Way, way back, to the little girl I used to be. I was 11 when I first learned what it meant to be powerless. My mother was a drunk. Not the kind who hides vodka in the laundry detergent. The kind who stumbles through the house in broad daylight, screams at the TV, and slaps you for breathing too loud. My father? He was worse. When he was home, which wasn't often, he was quiet. Cold. Calculated. A man who moved like a ghost but hit like a hammer. I remember once, I dropped his cigarette tray. Ash everywhere. He didn't yell. He just stared at me like I was a piece of trash stuck to his shoe. Then he grabbed me by the arm and dragged me out of the house barefoot, tossed me onto the front lawn and told me to stay out with the rest of the garbage. I slept outside that night. In the rain. In my pajamas. That's when I learned silence was the most dangerous weapon in the world. Not screaming. Not slapping. Silence. It seeps into your skin and convinces you you're not worth hearing. That you don't matter. That you're invisible. And if you're invisible, no one can hurt you, right? Wrong. I spent most of my teenage years pretending. Smiling when I wanted to scream. Agreeing when I wanted to run. I learned to be what people needed, not what I was. I became a shapeshifter. A survivor. A good girl. Until I wasn't. The first time I used a man, it wasn't for money. It was for safety. His name was Damien. 21. Tall. Older. He offered me rides to school when I didn't want to walk past the boys who'd yell from their bikes and call me a slut for wearing jeans that hugged my ass. He'd drive me, tell me I was pretty, buy me burgers, and lie through his teeth about respect. Then one night, he parked in the woods and locked the door. Told me it was time I paid him back. I didn't cry. Didn't scream. I reached into my backpack and pulled out a pocket knife I'd stolen from my dad's toolbox 2 weeks earlier. Pressed it against Damien's neck and told him if he ever tried that shit again, I'd carve my name into his face. He laughed. Said I was bluffing. So I carved. Didn't go deep. Just enough to make him bleed. Enough to make him remember. He never came near me again. That was the first time I realized something important. Power isn't given. It's taken. And once you get a taste of it, real, spine-tingling, blood-pumping power, you never forget it. Back in the present, I sat in my apartment, blinds drawn, laptop open, phone silent, and realized I hadn't felt this powerless since Damien. Since my father. Since that fucking cigarette tray. Who the fuck was this man? He knew about my puppets. He knew me. But that's impossible. My real name was scrubbed. My online footprints were wiped monthly. I changed devices, IP addresses, SIM cards. No one had ever gotten this close before. No one had even tried. Until now. I tried to distract myself. Went through my messages. Marcus had sent another 1,000. No request, no prompt. Brent was asking if I was mad at him. Eli had written an email confessing he loved me. Kevin? He sent a poem. A fucking poem. But I couldn't focus. Their desperation used to amuse me. Now it felt distant. Dull. Like static. My mind was still stuck on him. What if he was one of them? One of my puppets playing a long con? But no, they weren't that smart. None of them had the discipline, the patience, the cold, deliberate tone this man carried. He was something else. And I hated that I didn't know what. I started digging. Traced the messages. Set up decoys. Planted fake profiles to bait him. But he didn't take the bait. He didn't respond, just watched. And watching is worse than threats, worse than insults. It's what my father used to do. Watch, wait, judge, until he snapped. And I was starting to feel that same tension now, like I was walking barefoot on glass with a blindfold. I started hearing things at night. Every creak, every hum of the fridge, every notification made my skin twitch. I unplugged Alexa, turned off my webcam, taped over the mic. I was unraveling, piece by piece, thread by bloodied thread. The girl who once sliced a man's cheek open without blinking? She was cowering in the corner now, shaking, waiting, listening. And the worst part, I missed him, missed the messages, missed the danger. Because fear, when you've used it against others for so long, becomes an addiction. And I was deep in withdrawal, craving the next message like it was heroin. But he said to watch. So I did. I watched my inbox, my files, my doors. But nothing came. And in that silence, I heard the crack. The mask I'd worn, sexy, cold, untouchable Lola began to split. Because the truth was, I hadn't built an empire of power. I'd built a prison. And every puppet, every string, every secret was just another bar in the cage I locked myself in. And now, someone else had the key. Chapter 6, The Hunter Hunted. There's a moment in every hunt when the prey realizes it's been seen, truly seen. Not from a distance, not through binoculars, but locked on, like the glint of a sniper scope in sunlight. That exact second, when your gut flips and your chest tightens and your instincts scream run, is when the game changes. That moment had come. But this time, I wasn't the one watching. I was the one being watched. And it wasn't just paranoia anymore. It was fact. My texts stopped being delivered. Emails bounced. The burner accounts I'd built up, some for months, were suddenly gone, deleted. Vanished like they never existed. At first, I thought maybe it was a glitch. A server hiccup. But I wasn't that naive. Not anymore. Something, someone, was dismantling me from the inside out. The puppets were still there. But their strings were fraying. Marcus messaged me. Did you delete your backup chat? I had a panic attack thinking you'd exposed me. Brent texted. Are you ghosting me? I need to know I'm safe. Eli didn't text at all. He sent a $5,000 transfer with the subject line. In case this is the end. That one made me pause. These men, these hollow, desperate shells I had once dangled like keys on a ring, were starting to slip through my fingers. Not because they were strong, but because I was weak, distracted. Obsessively watching my own shadows. I barely slept. I couldn't eat. My mind spiraled in all directions, chasing answers I didn't have. The .zip file still sat unopened on my encrypted laptop. Its presence felt like a loaded gun on my coffee table, taunting me, daring me. I didn't touch it, but I couldn't ignore it either. I started seeing things, or maybe noticing them, I don't know. A black SUV parked across the street three nights in a row. A man in a hoodie who walked past my building, stopped, looked up at my window, then kept moving. Once, I saw someone standing in the lobby of my apartment complex, arms folded, wearing sunglasses, staring at nothing. I watched them through the peephole for 20 minutes. They never moved. Was I being followed? Was I losing my mind? Probably both. I changed phones. Twice. Switched SIMs. Reset all my passwords, again. Burned through 3 VPNs in 5 days. Scrubbed my search history every hour. I even wore a hat and sunglasses when I went to the grocery store at 2 a.m., just to buy water and ramen and stare at strangers too long. I was unraveling. And he knew it. The next message didn't come through a chat app. It came in the mail. My real mailbox. No return address. No postage stamp. Just a plain envelope with my alias, Lola Red, written in neat black ink. Inside, one printed photo. It was me, standing in my kitchen. Hair in a bun, no makeup, tank top, pouring wine, taken through the window. I dropped the envelope. My hands shook for the first time in years. Not from adrenaline, from fear. Real, bone-deep childhood-level fear. This wasn't digital anymore. This wasn't a game. This was physical, tangible, dangerous. He was here. He had seen me, my real face, my real life. The walls I'd built to separate Lola from the ghost of the girl I used to be. The one with cigarette burns on her arms and scars on her stomach from panic scratches. They weren't walls anymore. They were glass. I threw my phone. It shattered against the wall. Didn't help. I screamed, loud, into the silence of my apartment. It echoed back like a taunt. Who the fuck was he? How did he find me? What did he want? I wanted to burn it all down, torch my hard drives, delete the vault, erase the names, the evidence, the scripts, the nudes, the power. But I couldn't. Not yet. Because I needed one thing before I walked away from the empire I built. I needed revenge. If he was coming for me, I was going to find him first. So I went underground. Digital deep dive. Not just Tor browsing, I mean darknet digging. I pulled contacts from my BlackBook burner. Old clients, former hackers, digital ghosts I'd paid in Bitcoin years ago to build fake identities. I reached out to Clutch, an ex-NSA analyst turned mercenary for hire. Paid him $10,000 up front to track the source of the .zip file. Told him I was being stalked by a jealous ex. He didn't ask questions. 24 hours later, he called. It wasn't sent from a public network. It's custom, routed through at least 6 military-grade relays. Whoever did this, they knew what they were doing. I swallowed hard. Can you trace it? I asked. Silence. No, not yet. Maybe not ever. He paused. This guy isn't stalking you. He's studying you. That's when I realized I was no longer the hunter. I was the fucking specimen. The test subject in a glass tank, being poked, monitored, and documented. He didn't want to kill me. He wanted to break me. From the inside out. And it was working. That night, I sat in the dark with the .zip file on my screen. I'd avoided it for days. But I couldn't anymore. I opened it. Inside were 5 folders. /1 Marcus. /2 Brent. /3 Eli. /4 Kevin. /5 you. Each one filled with images. Recordings. Screenshots. Notes. Not just the ones I had, ones I didn't. He'd been watching me for months. Reading my messages. Listening to my voice notes. Recording me through hacked cameras. In the 5th folder, /you were videos. Of me pacing. Typing. Laughing. Sleeping. Sleeping. My skin crawled. My soul split. I wanted to scream and tear my face off. Burn my skin. Bleach my eyes. Crawl out of my body and never come back. But the last file, that's what shattered me. A video. Titled simply, Before the Fall. It opened with a shot of me, not Lola. Me. In my real clothes, grocery shopping, looking human. Tired. Real. Then it cut to scenes of me sitting at my laptop, switching voices, switching names, seducing, blackmailing, crying, everything. Overlaid with a voice. His voice. Calm. Measured. Cold. This is who you are. Not a goddess. Not a queen. Just a broken girl hiding behind filters and fear. A girl who became what she hated. A girl who thinks power means safety. But you're not safe. Not anymore. You're not in control. And soon everyone will know. Then it cut to black. And for the first time in my life, I cried. Not pretty tears. Not movie scene crying. I mean ugly sobs. On the floor. Hands shaking. Saliva in my mouth. Screaming into my fists like a wounded animal. He broke me. Not with violence. Not with force. With truth. He'd exposed the thing I'd worked so hard to bury me. Not Lola. Not the femme fatale. Just the girl with broken teeth and a bloodied past who thought manipulation could be her armor. And now, there were cracks in that armor. And the wolves were circling. Chapter 7, Final Exposure. I used to believe exposure was the greatest fear. That the idea of being seen, truly seen, beyond the curated photos, the filtered voices, the careful identities, was what destroyed people. But now, I know better. Exposure isn't what breaks you. The weight does. That haunting stillness before the storm. The not knowing when, where, how the collapse will come. The silence between text alerts. The absence of messages from men who once begged for your voice. The darkness where your power used to be. It's not the blast that kills you. It's the countdown. And mine had reached 0. I hadn't left my apartment in 3 days. I kept the curtains drawn, the lights off, my gun, the one I swore I'd never need, on the counter beside a half-empty bottle of gin and a shattered phone screen. My laptop was open. The video still paused at the moment his voice called me a broken girl. He wasn't wrong. I had spent years building a digital fortress. Carefully constructed identities. Rules. Protocols. Encryptions. Burners. Ghost numbers. Backup servers. I had built an empire on secrets, my own and everyone else's. And now, with one file, one message, one voice, he'd reduced all of it to rubble. My puppets? Gone. Marcus deleted all his accounts. Brent emailed me once, just one word. Blocked. Eli transferred 20 grand with a note. This ends now. Even Kevin, soft, stupid Kevin, reported my number to his company's internal security team. I know because I intercepted the report. His exact words. I was manipulated. She tricked me. She has material I didn't consent to share. I laughed when I read it, a bitter, acidic laugh that burned my throat. Consent. These men begged to be used. They offered their sins like gifts. I didn't take anything. I unlocked them. But none of that mattered anymore. The narrative had flipped, and I had no voice left to fight it. 3 days ago, I was a goddess. Today, I was a ghost. I hadn't showered. I hadn't eaten. My reflection in the mirror looked like something from a crime scene. Dark circles, cracked lips, wild eyes. A woman unraveling. A woman caught in her own web. And still no word from him. No follow-up messages. No threats. Just silence. Until today. The doorbell rang at 2:14 p.m. Not a buzz. A ring. My building doesn't have a doorbell. My heart stopped. I grabbed the gun. Crept to the door. Peered through the peephole. Nothing. But then, a small manila envelope slid under the door. No name. No label. No sound of footsteps after. Just an envelope. My fingers trembled as I picked it up, opened it, and pulled out a USB drive. That's it. No note. No warning. I turned it over in my hand. Black. Unbranded. Cold. I knew better than to plug it into my laptop. So I plugged it into a burner tablet. Powered it up. Scanned it. No viruses. No malware. One file. final_exposure.mp4. I hesitated. Then tapped play. It opened with silence. Black screen. Then footage. Of me. Real footage. Not Lola. Not red lipstick and sultry whispers. Me in the raw. Washing dishes. Crying on the couch. Tying my hair up. Screaming into a pillow. Kicking a chair. Laughing at nothing. All recorded. Angles from outside the window. Across the street. Hidden camera footage. Drones. Security feeds. I stared in horror. This wasn't just digital espionage. This was surveillance. Intimate surveillance. Someone had followed me. Lived in my shadow. Then came the audio. His voice. Calm. Measured. Soft. You thought you were in control. That you could build a world out of lies and stand on top of it like a queen. But you forgot something. Even predators can be prey. The screen flashed. Now it was my texts. Hundreds of them. To Marcus. Brent. Eli. Kevin. Sexts. Blackmail. Manipulation. My voice layered over each message, reading them out loud. My own words. Weaponized against me. Then the footage shifted. Him. Standing in front of a camera. Mask on. All black. Voice distorted now. I don't need to destroy you, Lola. You've already done that. I'm just giving the world a front row seat. Then came the reveal. A countdown. Titled, Mass Leak Upload 12 Hours. It was already ticking. Every file. Every screenshot. Every voice note. Scheduled for public release. He'd built a platform. Anonymous. Untraceable. And he'd timed it. In 12 hours, my entire empire would be exposed. Not just to the men, but to their wives, their companies, the media. And me. Fully doxed. Photos. Apartment. Name. Everything. The screen went black. I dropped the tablet. My vision blurred. My knees buckled. I fell to the floor, clutching my chest, gasping like I was drowning. It was over. He'd won. But as the seconds passed, something inside me shifted. The fear turned to rage. Hot. Violent. Alive. He thought he'd backed me into a corner. Thought I'd fold. Disappear. Run. No. No fucking way. If I was going to burn, I was taking him with me. I got to work. No more hiding. No more whispers. No more Lola. Just me. Stripped down. Ready to fight. I pulled out the backups I'd kept hidden even from myself. Hard drives in the ceiling tiles behind the toilet tank in the lining of my suitcase. My true insurance. Not just on my puppets, but on everyone. I had dirt on judges. CEOs. Cops. Senators. I never used it because I didn't need to. But now. Now I did. I pieced together the audio from his voice. Ran it through software. Matched cadence. Matched breath patterns. And found one hit. A name. Julian Mathers. 38. Cybersecurity analyst. Former whistleblower. Fired after leaking internal sex harassment complaints. Tried to take down the system. Got buried by it. That's what this was. Revenge. He wasn't just targeting me because I was a predator. He was targeting me because I reminded him of them. The ones who silenced him. Manipulated him. Used their power to hurt people. He saw me as a mirror. But he forgot one thing. I'm not a reflection. I'm a fucking weapon. I traced his signal, finally cracked the relay. tracked the IP to a rented co-working space downtown. I went there, in person, hair pulled back, hoodie, gloves. He wasn't there, but his setup was. Laptop, server, drives. I didn't hesitate. I took the whole fucking thing, burned the cloud backups, crashed the timers, smashed the server with a hammer. But I didn't delete everything. I took the evidence, saved it, for leverage. He wanted a war. I gave him one. That was 3 months ago. The leaks never happened. He never messaged again. He disappeared. But I know he's out there, watching, and I'm watching back. I've gone quiet since then. Off the grid. No more new puppets. No more sextortion. Not because I feel guilt, but because I feel powerless no more. I survived the storm. I walked through the fire. And now I know who I am. Not a goddess. Not a ghost. Not a girl looking for revenge. I'm something new. Something they'll never see coming. Because the hunter became the hunted. And now, she's hunting again.